Okay, today's daf in Masechet Gittin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Gimel. So we finished to the two dots, and we came out with the most amazing thing. I mean, because the one thing that any Jewish magazine will tell you, that the most antithetical to Kedushas Yisrael and to the difference between the Jews and the Goyim, is that the Goyim can have open marriages and have no respect for relationships. And well, turns out that Rebbe Eliezer holds, you can have open marriages. Oh my gosh, a disaster. So as you can imagine, the rabbinic crowd was not too happy about Rebbe Eliezer's psak. And so after Rebbe Eliezer died, Liachar Petirato Shel Rebbe Eliezer, so they wanted to make sure that people wouldn't follow this psak. So four zakenim came in to express how wrong Rebbe Eliezer was. And they were Elohim. It was Rebbe Yossi Haglili, Rebbe Tarfon, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, and Rebbe Akiva. So they all went in together. I think Gavi is going to go up today to take us to Rabbi Yossi Haglili, perhaps, so that we can actually be there while he's describing his problems that he has with Rabbi Eliezer's pshat. And if not, he'll go sometime later this week. So let's start with the four different approaches to what they didn't like about Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah. Now, these are very fascinating tainas, because instead of dealing with the specific issues, what they deal with, because this is a generalized concept, what they deal with is the generalized fallout from this psak, which is fascinating. There's, we've already gone through the logic, the rationale, the basis of the psukim, and so on. That we're not, it's not what we're discussing anymore. That was the machlokas between Rebbe Eliezer and the Chachamim. But what we want to take a look at is the global impact of what a situation like this could mean in terms of the implications. So therefore, Rebbe Tarfon says, look, let's consider a situation like this. The woman that was divorced in this fashion, so she goes and she marries the brother. I remember the real issue, of course, began with divorce, not with marriage, right? It was all what started with, whether we're going to learn out from Vayotza Vahaisa, is, are we going to be able to learn out from the fact that according to Rebbe Eliezer, you can give a divorce which only affects certain people, then according to Rebbe Eliezer, you can also give a marriage that only affects certain people. So now let's take a look and see whether such a divorce is really reasonable. The man gives a woman a divorce and says that this is your divorce, except for, well, I shouldn't say except it. I'm talking about Ella. We'll see. We still haven't made up our minds about that. And the only thing is, you can't marry so-and-so. Now, she goes and marries the brother of so-and-so. And then what happens was, the guy that she married dies without children. And now what's going to happen? She is supposed to fall to Yibum to the brother of the person that she married. But she can't, because the brother of the person that she married is the very person that she was never divorced vis-a-vis her original husband. And to him, she is still an Eishes Ish. So then she will not be able to get Yibum, obviously, right? So then Lo Nimtza Zeh Oker Davar Min HaTorah. So then it turns out that that first husband who gave her this weirdo get ends up destroying the mitzvah in the Torah of Yibum. That can't be. So as you can clearly see, says Rabbi Tarfon, the Torah is not talking about a kritut like this that would leave us bereft of the ability to do yibum. Nana. So this was the first approach. We're going to go back into every single one of these things, examine them, and to see whether they really make mistakes. Makes sense. Nana Rabbi Yossi Haglili. And he said, this whole thing doesn't make sense. I mean, globally speaking, do we ever find such situations in the Torah? Either something is usher or something is mutter. How could a woman be usher to one person and mutter to other people? That can't be the way that the Torah views kritut. Halamadata she'ein ze kritut. Again, we'll take a look at the logic of this later. Nana Reb Elazar ben Azariah and said, look, when the Torah talks about a sefer kritut, it's got to be a davar hakoreit beino leveina. But in this case, she is still married to this guy. She's still bound to this guy. So how could that be called kritut? Alamadata she'ein ze kritut. Nana Rebbe Akiva v'yomar. Let me ask you something. Suppose this woman would go and get married to someone else. And that someone else, they live together as man and wife for many years. She had children with him. And then he died, or maybe gave her a get. Then she goes and she gets married to this Mr. X that she wasn't allowed to marry. Lo nimtza get patel ubanei mamzerim. So then it turns out that years later, she ends up turning her children into mamzerim. Do you accept a situation like that? Halamadata she'ein ze kritut. This is not acceptable that the Torah would consider something where everything is still up in the air and it's possible to create mamzerus out of your relationship to call that kritut. That's the kritut that the Torah wants. And I have another issue, says Rabbi Akiva. Let me ask you something. Now, this is a subtle argument, gentlemen. So please pay close attention. Haresha hayazash in Ezra alaf kohen. Let's imagine a case like this. The Mr. X that she wasn't allowed to marry, that the get wasn't for, he was a Kohen. Now, the guy that was originally married to her and divorced her now dies. Okay. Vis-a-vis this Kohen, what is the status of this woman? She is, fascinatingly enough, a almona, not a grusha, because to this Kohen, she was never divorced, right? She was only divorced to others. Now, in practical terms, despite the fact that she is only an almana, v'nimtzeis almana etzlo, so to this Kohen, she's an almana. And to all other people in the world, she's considered to be a grusha. Since she is considered to be a grusha to all other people, what is the din to this Kohen? Well, remember, we saw that a woman who in any circumstances at all could be considered a grusha is a surah to a Kohen, even though she was not a grusha to him. Remember the strange drusha? Isha hagrusha me isha. A Kohen cannot marry a woman who is divorced only from her husband. And from there we learned that even though he gave a get, and the get said, you are divorced from me, but you are not allowed to marry anybody else. Nonetheless, we said that that Kohen is not allowed to marry a woman like that, although by no stretch of the imagination could that be called a viable divorce, right? Akiva, you're not paying attention, sweetie. That could not be called a viable divorce. Nonetheless, can she marry that Kohen? No. Why? Because for others, she was defined as a grusha. Now, consider the, and please, Barnea, not now. So consider the implications of that logic. If this Kohen, to whom she is muteret because she's a grusha, because she's an almana, not a grusha, nonetheless is treated as if she is a grusha. So grusha itself is not a very serious iser. Remember, it's an iser lav, it's not an iser koris, and according to almost all the shitas, but Rabbi Akiva, the kedushin would be chal, so on and so forth, right? So consider this kal v'chomer. Uma grusha shehi kala. The iser of marrying a kohen, marrying a divorcee, is in lav b'alma. Nonetheless, it was enough to asser her for this kohen because it affects other people, even though it doesn't affect her, right? Now, if she is considered to be an eshes ish to other people, and that's because he did not give her a divorce to certain other people, right? That's a very chomer iser. So even if she was given a divorce for me, should I not have to treat her as an eshes ish if the kohen needed to treat her as a grusha? Therefore, the entire concept doesn't make sense. If the Torah was willing to answer a Kohen only because of the fact that she was Grusha Miisha, Al Achas Kama Vekama, it would answer anybody on the basis of her being an Eishes Ish, even though she's not an Eishes Ish, technically speaking, vis-a-vis himself. You hear the argument? Now, the obvious question that you have on this argument is a question that we considered earlier. But remember that the Torah is always more machmir on Kayanim. Can you learn out from Kayanim? Can you learn out this general halacha to others? That the Gemara will discuss. But aside from that issue, is it clear what we're doing here? Therefore, Taina's Rabbi Akiva, that halamadata she'en zikritut, doesn't make sense to say that this kind of divorce, which anyway should answer everybody else because of the fact that she's not divorced to everyone and she's an Eishes Ish, in the same way that the Grusha was Asura to the Kohen, even though it wasn't his Grusha, so then this is not a kosher kritut. So Rabbi Yehoshua said to the four Zakenim, gentlemen, Ein meshivinet ha'arile achar mita. You know, it's very easy to walk into the zoo and tweak the beard of a dead lion. I'd like to see you do that to the live lion. You know, now all of a sudden everybody's a big shot. You're all coming in here. You got an answer. Reb Lez is wrong because of this. Nah, he's wrong because of that. You just better watch out that he doesn't wake up and roar. So this is no way. If he can't defend himself, this is no way for you guys to start coming and attacking Reb Eliezer. Omar Rava, and Rava pointed out that the truth is, every one of these tainas against Reb Eliezer can be easily shown to be fallacious. And I'll explain each one of you. None of them are any good. The only one that makes any sense was the one of Reb Eliezer ben Azariah about the fact that she has to be a sefer kritut, and what kind of that, there's no way to really show is wrong. Tani nami achi, Omer Rabbi Yossi, ro'eh ani et divrei Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah divrei kulam. I think all of these arguments, they don't make much of an impression on me. But this, that, look, the bottom line is, the Torah calls it a sefer kritut, I don't understand how we use that word for something which clearly is not. So I don't get that. Let's go through each one of them and see why we consider them not to be a meaningful question. So, Omar Mark, you said that each one was a problem. I'll take them one by one. Nana Rabbi Tarfon V'yamar, HaReshal Chazuv V'nisei Tachiv Shazesh V'nesra Alav, U'meit Lo Banim, Lo Nimtzei Tzeo Ker Davar Min HaTorah. So if she goes ahead, marries the brother of the guy that she's not allowed to be married to, based on the get, and then her new husband ups and dies, leaving her to his brother, but now she can't get Yibam because his brother is not divorced from her, from the original husband. So it turns out that this guy uproots a din in the Torah. That's crazy. What do you mean uproots? I mean, he didn't do with anything. I understand. He uprooted. He told her to go marry. I didn't understand. All he did was give a get. She created a situation where it happens to be that she used this, and therefore it turned out there was a problem. I mean, it certainly was none of the issue of the husband. How is it supposed to have anything to do with this? He didn't uproot anything. All he did was give her a get. Well, but he was matne, lakor davar min haTorah. I mean, didn't he make effectively a t'nai that would make it impossible to be mekayim yibam? What? How did he do that? I don't understand. He told her to go marry the guy's brother? Mika Omar La, did he ever tell her? Lo sagido do mitzvah do lachud ugavra. What he said, the only way this is going to work is if you marry this guy's brother. You know, he has no idea she was going to go do that. It's insane to use this language. He was oker. He was masna to be oker. Well, Rabbi Tarfon means, but he caused it to happen. Goreim la kor davar min haTorah. What do you mean, goreim? I don't understand what that means, goreim, because you set up a situation, and then it happens to be because of all other things that take place, you're called a goreim? I mean, according to that, if you're doing something wrong, so then that would mean you're not allowed to marry your brother's daughter. There's a problem in marrying a brother's daughter? Yes? what happened if the brother dies and now she's going to fall to her father, right? You, the brother, end up leaving a child to her father for Yuma. No nimtza oker davar min haTorah. It's ridiculous, I understand. So we shouldn't allow a person to cause the possible situation by which, through marrying his brother's daughter, that daughter is going to fall to her own father, and therefore they won't be able to be Mekayim Yuma. I mean, is that ridiculous or is that not ridiculous? Nobody says that there's such an issur. Nobody would call that in his right mind gorem la kor davar min haTorah. We never find that there's such a problem. It's a mitzvah to marry your relatives. Well, you're right. But that's what Rava meant when he said this makes no sense. That's exactly what he's referring to. You stumbled over it, my friends. Ainu pircha. Well, that's what Rava meant. Don't take this too seriously. Okay, fine. Now, let me ask you something else. What approach to Rebbe Eliezer was Rebbe Tarfon assuming? Because remember, we have two approaches to Rebbe Eliezer, correct? One is that this was a chutz equivalent, and that it was a shiur beget, and the other one is that this was an almanat equivalent, and that it was just like a normal condition. Which approach did Rebbe Tarfon assume when he asked this question? If we're talking about where he said that you are muter to all men except, so then I have bad news for you. Rebbe Tarfon's point is not just wrong, it's completely off the wall. Because I got news for you. According to Rebbe Eliezer, consider a situation like this. She is given a divorce on condition that she doesn't marry Mr. X. She goes ahead and marries somebody else that has no connection to Mr. X. That somebody else subsequently dies. Rebbe Eliezer says she can now marry Mr. X. Because when she got married to someone else, that is now the status, her marital status is defined by this new marriage. There's no more leftovers of an old marriage when somebody's married again. So therefore, when he dies, she is now free to marry Mr. X. And if he gives her a divorce, she's free to marry Mr. X. So therefore, the case doesn't even make sense. Had she gone ahead and married the brother of Mr. X, and then the brother died, she would have been allowed to have Yibum from Mr. X, according to Rebbe Eliezer himself, because the Tanya, Modeh Rebbe Eliezer himself, who says that she's not allowed to marry Mr. X, is Modeh, that if he was Megaresh et Ishto v'amar lo hareyat muteret l'chol adam chutz b'ploni, somebody who divorces his wife and says to everyone but Mr. X, and then she goes and marries stam a guy, Joe Schmo, and then that Joe Schmo dies or gives her a get, that at that point she's allowed to go and marry Mr. X. So therefore, that can't be the case of chutz. It must be that Rebbe Eliezer was referring to a case where he said, on condition that you don't marry so-and-so, well, then it has nothing to do with her marital status. At any point that she would get up and marry that guy, she would then now make herself asura, by definition, because she now canceled her original divorce, you see? So that shows that Rebbe Tarfon's opinion in the whole approach to was Rebbe Eliezer speaking about the case of Ella as an almanat or the case of Ella as chutz. This actually shows that clearly he must have been referring when he said to the almanat, because otherwise it wouldn't have made any sense what Rebbe Tarfon said. Now let's talk about Rebbe Yossi Aglili. Rebbe Yossi Aglili says, does that make sense? Where do we ever find in the Torah that something is usher to A and mutter to B? If it's usher, it's usher lakol. If it's mutter lakol. Says the Gemara, what in the world is this talking about? We always find things in the Torah that are mutter to A and usher to B. I mean, what about truma? Kohen's allowed to eat truma. A zar's not allowed to eat truma. What about kachim? It's asur lezeh, mutter lezeh. No, but he meant, where do we find any woman that is usher to one and mutter to the other? What? How about your mother? I don't think you can marry your mother, but she can marry anybody else. How about your daughter? I mean, I understand. All of the arayot, they're asurot to certain people and mutorot to other people. So what's the problem? No, 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 I didn't mean women. I meant marriage. Where do we find a marriage? Asers a person to one individual, but not to another. Well, how about your wife? Your wife is a married woman. She's muteret to you, but she's asura to everybody else. Isn't that part of the nature of marriage? So what's the problem? What do you mean, where do we find? That is the most central place where we find a woman who's muteret lezen, asura lezen. So what is he asking? Well, you hit it right on the nail, my friend. That's the problem. Ainu pircha. That's exactly what Rava was saying. L'kulam hislu pircha. This is not a very meaningful question. Okay, I want to know. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, was he referring to Rabbi Eliezer in the case of chutz, or was he referring to Rabbi Eliezer as in the case of almanat? In other words, which approach of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachomim's machloket did he believe in, Rabbi Yossi Aglili? But my, if we're talking about a case of almanat, so then, now listen, gentlemen, this is a problem, what we're about to ask, because we discussed this yesterday. If we're understanding the case of the get in the Mishnah, of Ella, to be an on condition, and he said on condition that you don't marry so-and-so, he never prohibited her from having relations with so-and-so, did he? He just said he can't marry him. So then, if that's the case, it isn't the same at all. The two cases of Rabbi Eliezer, I mean, are massively different. One of them is a real get, and it allows sex between two people who were previously asurim because of the fact that she's an Eishes Ish. The other one was a limitation on the get. And because of that, if you recall, we learned yesterday that Tosfos says, obviously, I mean, the whole sugya starts to fall apart. If we're going to say that he meant you just can't marry, but you certainly are not asurot one to another in terms of your relationships. I mean, so then this has nothing to do with shir beget, and there would be immense differences between the two approaches. And the Gemara was just ignoring the main thing. So therefore, Tainus Tosfos, doesn't matter whether the Tanai would be on condition that you don't marry, or the Tanai is on condition that you neither marry nor have any relations with so-and-so. Clearly, both of them would be the same. Now, the Gemara now seems to believe that actually we're talking specifically about a case where he did not say you can't have relations. He only said you can't marry. And Tosfos has to explain away this Gemara by saying that the Gemara is just written for dummies. And as it wants to take a simple case, but obviously there are comebacks to the more accurate case where he specifically said you can neither marry nor have any relations with. Okay, so because of that, the Gemara answers that if we're talking about a case of almanat, so then why is Rabbi Yossi saying she's muteret to one and asura to the other? She's allowed to sleep with anybody as long as she doesn't marry him. She can only shack up with him. But okay, fine, but that's not called muteret to one and asura to the other. So then that can't be the case. Ella, he must be referring to the case of chutz. Now, obviously, this is not really true, because in the event that he made the tanai that you neither marry nor have any relations with, so then we wouldn't have a clear-cut indication of how it is that Rabbi Yossi Aglili was understanding Rabbi Eliezer. Now let's move on to Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva gets up and says, listen, if this woman went ahead, got married to some guy that is outside of any of this discussion, she lives with him for years, they have children and grandchildren, and now he dies. And then she goes and she marries the very guy that was Mr. X. Now she's turning all her children and grandchildren into mamzerim. Do you believe that that is a valid situation that the Torah would consider to be kritut? Sounds to me insane. Lo nimtza get batel ubanei mamzerim. Wait a second over here, says the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva. And what if the condition would have been that you're not allowed to eat chocolate chip cookies? And she lives with this guy for 30 years, children and grandchildren. And one day she sees this absolutely incredible chocolate chip cookie that she simply cannot resist, furtively grabs it and takes a bite of a chocolate chip cookie, thereby turning all of her children and grandchildren into mamzerim. Does that seem...
That's the way the cookie crumbles.
Does that seem reasonable to you, Rabbi Akiva, that the Torah would consider that to be a get? Did anybody say it's not a get? What are you talking about? So why is this any different than that? Bekulu t'nai d'alma nami lo tinsim. She should never get married based on any condition, because maybe she'll mess up the condition and eat her chocolate chip cookie. And dilma lo mekaimele lo t'nai. And that means years later, she cancels her get. She turns her children into mamzerim. You never said anything was wrong with that. Yep, you hit it right on the nose. That's what's wrong with Rabbi Akiva's argument. Exactly. Okay, so now we know what's wrong with everybody's argument. Now, let me ask, how does Rabbi Akiva understand the machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim? Did he understand it as referring to chutz, or did he understand it as referring to al-minat? What would you say? Ilema b'chutz. I mean, if you're going to tell me that he understands it to be a shiur beget, then Rabbi Akiva no longer has got a problem. Because Lamaisa, we saw before, that Rabbi Eliezer allows her, in the event that another person married her in between, allows her to marry Mr. X. And therefore, even if she eats the chocolate chip cookie Mr. X, nothing is going to happen to her children and grandchildren, because she was already married to the other guy that gave her all of these children and grandchildren, right? Because, as we quoted before, the Braita, Titania Modeha Ya Rebbe Eliezer Bimagareshet Ishto V'yomar Lahareyat Mutaret L'chol Adam Chutz Miploni. And then she goes and she gets married to some other person, and then that person dies or divorces her, that at that point she's allowed to go back to Mr. X. So it must be that Rabbi Akiva understood Rabbi Eliezer to be referring specifically to a case where it's a condition. And that's how he understood Ella, on condition. Okay. Now let's take a look at the second point of Rabbi Akiva, because remember, Rabbi Akiva had two issues that bothered him about Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, so the first one was, how can we consider something to be a divorce if it ultimately can now turn all of your descendants into mamzerim? That's not much of a divorce. Fine. Next objection was, Davracher, Hareshaya Zeshen Esra Lava Kohen. Now, this was the slightly more complex argument. The man that was known as Mr. X turns out to be a Kohen. Okay. And then the original husband dies. What is this woman to that Mr. X, the Kohen? She is an almana because she was never divorced. To him, Anna Kohen is allowed to marry an almana. However, is Mr. X, the Kohen, allowed to marry this woman, even though she's only an almana and not a grusha? He may not. Why may he not? Well, because she is a grusha to other people. And remember, we had our special limud that when it comes to a Kohen, he cannot marry a divorcee, even if she's only divorced from her husband, not to anybody else. Just isha grusha me isha. So I ask you, is it not a kal v'chomer? If grusha, which is really an isra lav b'alma, and she nonetheless remains a surah to him because of this little tzad gerushin, which did not affect him personally, it affected others. This other woman here, initially, was an ashes ish. That's a very heavy-duty problem. And if she's an ashes ish to someone, doesn't that mean that you should be also at least usher because she's someone's ashes ish? Same way that this Kohen is usher because she's someone's grusha? So it's a kal v'chomer, ashes ish is a chomer. Now, what is the case that Rabbi Akiva is referring to here? Is it an almanat or is it a chutz? Because, I mean, if we're talking about a almanat, then she is a grusha. She's a real grusha. Because he only said, you can't sleep, you can't marry her. He never said that Mr. X can't sleep with her. So he's not keeping his marriage in effect to prevent her from having sexual relations with people. He just doesn't want her married to so-and-so. So then she is a Grusha. Again, Tosfos explains that this is the Gemara for dummies, because obviously we could be talking a case where he specifically said, on condition you neither marry nor have relations with Mr. X, right? Okay, we just keep it easy. So we're saying, therefore, Rabbi Akiva's Kal V'chomer wouldn't apply at all, because she is a Grusha. So we've got to be talking, Rabbi Akiva holds, that Rabbi Eliezer was referring to Ella as Chutz. I don't understand. Can't he make up his mind? First, he had this problem with Rabbi Eliezer that only made sense if he said that it meant Almanah. And then he asked the question that only makes sense if Rabbi Eliezer holds Ella means Chutz. Rabbi Akiva, don't you think you should make up your mind? Is Rabbi Eliezer discussing Chutz? Is Rabbi Eliezer discussing Almanah? Ask the Gemara. Rabbi Akiva can't make up his mind. I mean, he means Chutz. If he holds Rabbi Eliezer, understands Ella as being a Chutz, a Shiur, then he should have asked only the second thing here about the question of the Kal V'chomer, that an Eish HaSish should be a Surah to everybody if she's someone's Eish HaSish. Okay? But he can't ask that. He can't ask the first one. If he holds it, he's referring to the case of Amanat, then he should have asked them only the first one and not mentioned this thing about Eish HaSish and Kal V'chomer as it's irrelevant. No, of course, that's not Rabbi Akiva's personal opinion. Rabbi Akiva was aware of the fact that there was a machlokas, and that some people were understanding Rabbi Eliezer as referring to a case of Chutz. And there were other people, Lika de Amri, Almanat. So therefore, he had two questions, and he was able to attack any particular approach to Rabbi Eliezer. If somebody would say, I believe Rabbi Eliezer understands Ella as Chutz. Okay, so then he would have brought his second problem, that she should be considered to be an Eish HaSish for others, and therefore affect you as a Kal V'chomer. And if somebody would come and say, Rabbi Eliezer understood Ella to mean Almanah, so then I would have brought the first situation. How can you have a condition that's going to turn your children into Mamzerim? Fine. So he basically covered what he thought were all the bases for Rabbi Eliezer. We saw that the first argument wasn't persuasive, because then chocolate chip cookies would be usher to make a gerushin over. And what's the problem over here that Rava said, yeah, this doesn't really make any sense, what Rabbi Akiva said. You never explained to me why the second thing that Rabbi Akiva said doesn't make any sense. Why not? I mean, I know what you're thinking, but you're thinking the wrong thing. You're probably thinking that you want to ask, well, you can't make a Kal V'chomer from Isurei Kahuna, because Isurei Kahuna are always more chomer. So you're going to prove that a regular guy, if a Kohen is a sur to a semi-Gerusha, so to speak, to others, so a regular guy should be a sur for sure to a semi-Eish HaSish, that is, to others, it doesn't follow. The Torah is always more makpid on Kohanim. Okay, let's sit inside. Are you going to tell me that the problem with Rabbi Akiva is that Isur Kahuna is shiny? That doesn't prove anything. Because remember that the entire basis of Rabbi Eliezer's limud is from where? From the pasuk about Isurei Kahuna, for God's sake. Isha Grusha Me'isha. And he learned from that, that if a Kohen is considered to be Asur as a divorcee to a woman who is not really divorced from anybody, she's just divorced from her husband, but she's not muter to anybody, so then a regular person would be considered to be a kosher divorce if at least it's divorced to him. You should have told Rabbi Eliezer, excuse me, Isurei Kahuna are shiny. Right? So obviously, Rabbi Eliezer does not consider that to be an issue. He learned it out from Isurei Kahuna. And therefore, don't try to tell me that Rabbi Akiva, in attacking Rabbi Eliezer, does not have the right to bring a raya from a Kal V'chomer from Isurei Kahuna. He most certainly does. That was Rabbi Eliezer's own logic. Okay? Yeah, okay. Except that that's your personal opinion, my dear friend. How do you know that that's where Rabbi Eliezer learned it from? Remember that we had two approaches to where Rabbi Eliezer learned it from. One was Rabbi Yanai, who was quoting Zokein Echad, and he learned it out of the pasuk that is the Haita Leish Acher, even Leish Acher, which had nothing to do with the Kohen. It was Rabbi Yochanan who said that the logic was from the fact that it's Isha Grusha Meisha, which is a particular din in the Kohen. Rava, who said Rabbi Akiva doesn't make any sense, that's because Rava held like that other approach, Rabbi Yanai, and that the basis in Rabbi Eliezer is indeed nothing to do with the Kohen. It has to do with Yatzav Aitali Shacher. And Enochinani, I mean, I can't prove that I'm right, but since Rava Rabbi Yanai Mishum Zeket Hechad Masne, so therefore, he told Rabbi Eliezer, you can't make a Kal V'Chomer. I mean, he told Rabbi Akiva, you can't make a Kal V'Chomer because Yisrei Kohen are different. And Rabbi Eliezer agrees that Yisrei Kohen are different. He never learned it out from Kohen. Right? Okay. Now, Rabbi Yeshua got up and said, you don't tweak the lion when the lion is no longer alive. But don't try answering Rabbi Eliezer when he's not there to eat you up alive. If he was there, he would have made you into 2 cents. He would have given you an answer. You can't show that he's wrong. Wait a minute. Rabbi Yeshua is supporting Rabbi Eliezer and claiming you can't ask a question on Rabbi Eliezer. I got news for you. Rabbi Yeshua himself has got a question on Rabbi Eliezer, which I'm going to quote you later. So how come he's shouting at everybody else? Who do you think you are asking a question on Rabbi Eliezer? No. He was telling them, look, guys, I got problems with Rabbi Eliezer too, okay? I also have a question, but I'm not coming in here to throw my question in together with your questions over here, because I say this to me myself as well as to you. Bein l'didi, bein l'ditru. I look in the mirror and I tell myself, who do you think you are? Ein meshivin et ari le'achar mita. So that's why I'm not joining up, but I mean, if you want to know, do I record this question? Yes, I do record this question. Okay. I'm not going to walk in here and say, nah, Rabbi Akiva, nah, Rabbi. I don't lift up my voice. No, nah means the Anita, the Amarta, like you for sure have got something to proclaim. I'm a little hesitant. I wouldn't say nah. It's fascinating implications, by the way, for the Haggadah Shel Pesach. And Rashi actually speaks out over here that the lashon of na'ana has that implication of lifting up your voice. There's this surety, this proclamation element that's associated with it. Well, now that you mention that Rabbi Yehoshua has got a problem, can we just know what the problem is? Hesitantly, of course. But could you tell us the problem? So, umay pircha the Rabbi Yehoshua. What did Rabbi Yehoshua consider to be a problem in Rabbi Eliezer? This occurs in a bright, the Tanya. Omar Rabbi Yehoshua. Take a look at the pasuk. This is a fascinating question that he's got. Listen, it says, remember, in the pasuk that we have, that compares v'yatsa v'hayta. That was that primary question of a hekesh between the dinim of kedushin and the dinim of gerushin. And that's what lay at the basis of all of this scandalous shita that you can make a partial kedushin because you can make a partial gerushin, right? But now there's another fascinating implication to that pasuk. Let's think about the pasuk. So, ki yikach ish isha. Now, this is a pristine marriage. A man takes a woman, and then, lo tibzachin beinav, he divorces her, v'shilcha mi beito. And then, v'halcha, she goes, v'hayta le'ish acher. She gets married to another person. Now, that means that we are talking about two marriages here in this pasuk. One prior to her divorce and one subsequent to her divorce, correct? We are making a comparison not only between the marital dinim and the divorce dinim, which is very important in so many ways, but we're also making a comparison between the pre-marital time ki yikach isha of the first marriage and the premarital time v'halcha v'hayta le'ish acher of the second marriage. And therefore, I believe that the Torah is specifically being makish kodmei havaya shnia lekodmei havaya rishona. We are comparing her status prior to her second marriage to her status prior to her first marriage. Just like prior to her first marriage, she was completely and totally free of any association with any man. There was nobody who had any claim on her relationships. So ma kodmei havaya rishona dolo agida beinish achrina, she is not bound to another person. Then the Torah is saying that in order for her to go and to marry somebody else in the context of a shulchan bebeito, it's got to be that way before her second marriage too. She is completely detached from any other person, which shows that Rabbi Eliezer, who says that you could go and get married to somebody, even though you are still an Eishes Ish to the first guy vis-a-vis someone else, that can't be true, because then it isn't the same. The situation prior to marriage one is fundamentally different to the situation prior to marriage two. That was the beautiful question that Rabbi Yehoshua had on Rabbi Eliezer. Now, I want to talk about the actual din, okay, of Rabbi Eliezer and some of the implications of that din. So we said that Rabbi Eliezer, in the event that she would go and marry somebody else, and then that somebody else died, or divorced her for that matter, the second marriage would have totally subsumed her first marriage. And whenever it dissolves, either through death or divorce, she is now completely free to marry anybody, even including Mr. Chocolate Chips himself, because of the fact that the first marriage that created those problems is gone and forgotten now that she's married another guy. So let's just review that for a minute. Gufa. Moder Rabbi Eliezer, we said, Rabbi Eliezer agrees that in the event that somebody was Megarish Ishto with this weird concoction saying, Hareyat Muteret L'chol Adam, except for so-and-so, she goes and she marries somebody unrelated, somebody she meets in Shuk Mach Yehuda, when it's Almana Nizgarsh, and then he dies or he divorces her, that then she is allowed to marry Mr. Chocolate Chips. Now, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar did not like that at all, for another reason. Heishiv Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar tshuva l'divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is getting it left and right over here, no matter what he holds. Does he hold it tzchutz? Does he hold it talmanat? Does he hold that it's mutter in the case that she married somebody else? Everybody's got something to say to Rabbi Eliezer. You know, that's what happens. No faltura chodat sakina, the Gemara says. The shore collapses that everybody was running away from, climbing up the roof. Look at that shore. Oh, my God. And then he collapses. Everybody takes out the knife and they're ready to cut off pieces. Incredible. Vicious humans. But anyway, so here is Rabbi Eliezer now being attacked even on this secondary issue, right? What's your problem, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar? Heichan matzinu shezeh oser v'zeh matir. I understand. She was asura because of a prior marriage. How does the fact that she's marrying somebody else take off the Eishes Ish status of a prior marriage? The din of taking off an isra of a marriage always has to do with the one who made the marriage. So either he divorces or he dies. But you can't have somebody else taking off your marriage for you by dying in your stead, can he? So how exactly is this supposed to work? Heichan matzinu shezeo service amatir. What? What are you talking about? What about every single case of yibum? A guy marries a woman, and now she's not allowed to marry anybody else until the brother comes along and gives her chalitza. It's not his marriage. How could another guy take off the yisur from the first guy? How come it never occurred to you before that that's a problem? Because it's not. It's the Yavam that's creating the Isser. If the Yavam wouldn't be alive, then she obviously could go marry whoever she wants when her husband died. So the only reason she's got a problem is because of Mr. Yavam. So when Mr. Yavam gives her the heter, it's his own problem that he's giving a heter for. Sorry, my objection stands. Okay, what about Nidorim? How about Nidorim? A guy takes a netter, he goes to some rabbi somewhere, and the rabbi says, behold, the chicken is fish. So now he's got a papal dispossession. I don't understand. How could somebody else take off an isser? There you go. So these kind of things happen. No, not true. Because Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Chacham Atir Klum Ela B'Charot. It's all very nice to say that the Chacham is the legalization of the fact that the person who made the neder has now changed his mind about the neder. You can't just arbitrarily say, well, you'd prefer not to have the neder? Okay, mutalach. You can't say that. You have to first know that the guy is sorry that he made the neder. You find the petach, I never would have made the neder had I been, and so on and so forth. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about arbitrarily another guy upping and dying and thereby taking off the marriage from a guy who didn't up and die. How do you explain that? I think that doesn't make any sense. Well, wait a minute. A husband can arbitrarily remove the neder of his wife and she does not have to have changed her mind in any way. And she could be screaming and yelling, I want this neder. And he's saying, well, I don't want this neder. Pow. And that takes off her neder. So what about that? Isha no deret. She creates the iser. Hubby comes along and is made. I explain that. No, because that we know. Rav Pinchas explained that in the name of Rava. The Amar Rav Pinchas v'shmei de Rava, kol hanoderet al dat ba'alahi noderet. A woman who takes a neder always has a space in her brain thinking, yeah, what's going to be if he really puts up a fuss about this, you know? So it's always sort of tentative based on the Baal's agreement. And that's basically why the Torah provided the Baal with the ability to be made. That's actually why even where we have a Kedusha Derabbanan, we allow a Baal to be made for Nedarim, right? Because we say it's still true that Kol HaNoderet, Adat Baal HaNoderet. Na, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah. So we had that last thing that everybody, well, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, now that made sense. Okay, what did he say? He says, the Torah says Sefer Kritut. Sefer Kritut means, by definition, Davar HaKoreit Beino LeVeina. You need a cutoff. Where's the cutoff when this guy is still controlling her relations with other men? And how come all of the other Rabbanan, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfa, how come they didn't ask from that question? I mean, isn't that the most obvious problem with the whole idea of a partial kritut? So what do they do with this pasuk? I kritut my avdile. So what do they understand is the pasuk coming to tell me? If it isn't coming to tell me something that is so basic. No, they say that this comes to cover a situation like this. Mibaylo look at Tanya. Somebody gives his wife a get on condition that she never drinks wine again, or on condition that she's never to go into her father's home. If he says never, then this is not a get. Why? Because there's always an attachment to his control. She can never do this. So le'olam ein zekritu. But if he says for 30 days, then it's like something that is like any other tonight. This will be your get when you dye your hair orange for a day. Okay, fine. You know, so she dyes her hair orange for a day. I'll suffer. So then it would be fine if it's for 30 days. Now, if that's true, that this is a fundamental understanding of the nature of kritut, and that when it comes to the din of Rabbi Eliezer, we would not have learned that that's a problem because the kritut is totally valid insofar as it goes. That's a totally different way of looking at it. The kritut is valid insofar as it goes for everyone in the world except this person. So that is a kritut. But it's not valid for anybody if you're never allowed to drink wine. So how does Rabbi Eliezer, obviously if Rabbi Eliezer himself holds, this, I'm talking about now Rabbi Elazar. So he himself holds that this is enough of a reason to ask on Rabbi Eliezer, how does Rabbi Elazar know this din about a condition forever? No, that he says the Torah could have said Sefer Karet. And instead the Torah says Sefer Kritut. And that tells me already that halach. And therefore the very concept of Kritut is fundamentally antithetical to Rabbi Elazar, that to Rabbi Eliezer, that Rabbi Elazar is asking on, who claims that you can give a chutz get. Okay, and what about the other Rabbanan? how come they didn't learn both things from here? And that way they would have been able to ask Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah directly to Rebbe Elazar instead of beating around the bush the way Rebbe Tarfon does and the way Rebbe Akiva does, the way Rebbe Yeshua does. I mean, why couldn't they have also learned out Karet Kritut? Because they don't hold that Karet Kritut is a drasha, at least not for this, as Tosis explains. On my Rav, we talked about conditions that are considered to be strings attached and not a proper kritut. So somebody would say, Reze Gitech, this is your get on condition that you don't drink wine. Now, suppose he says that you don't drink wine as long as I'm alive. And that's not a get, because that means that the entire time of the marriage, obviously if he's dead, then he's no longer married anyway, right? So that's irrelevant. But he's going to control her the entire time that he is alive. Then he has never gotten out of her life. So then that's not kritut. He won't take himself out of her life. You're going to be drinking that wine over my dead body. Exactly. So that's not a good get. But what if he says, Kol yimei chaye ploni, so long as that bartender is alive, you're not allowed to drink anything. That's okay. Why? Why is that? What's the difference between so-and-so's life and my life? Because, I mean, are you going to say that maybe the bartender will die and then she's able to drink wine? At that point, it's 100% a t'nai that was bekuyam. The same thing is true of him. I mean, he could die. And then we know that she'll never drink wine again in his life because he ain't coming back. That can't be the reason. Ella Ema, the reason is, and the correct way to say it is, if he says all the day of your life, then it's not kritut. But if he says all the day of my life, then it is considered to be kritut, because he could die today, and then she's got a life full of plenty drinking. It turned out that he never controlled her life of drinking. Now this is a little bit different than the Gemara, as Tosis points out, than the Gemara in Yuma about the Kohen Gadol making a t'nai, and is not necessarily correct. In other words, what we said before about as long as I am alive, that's also a permanent problem. There is a possibility that that approach in Rava is still correct. Okay, now that we're talking about leaving out a get, shear in a get, leaving out a particular guy from a get. Can you leave out a particular day from a get? What do you think about that? So, I give you a divorce for the next day, but then you're back married to me. Or I give you a divorce except for every New Year's Eve when we're still married and then we sleep together. Is that a good divorce? As the divorce, the same way you can leave out a guy from a divorce, maybe you can leave out a day from a divorce, according to Rebbe Eliezer. So, by me name, Rav Amir Nach, suppose you give someone a divorce, you say, today, this is your divorce, you are not my wife, but tomorrow you are my wife. What's the din? And this is a valid question, I believe, both according to Rebbe Eliezer and according to the Chachamim. Because look, according to Rebbe Eliezer, I mean, I could still say that even though Rebbe Eliezer says you can have a divorce for Mr. A and not for Mr. X, that's for Mr. But, I mean, the divorce has got to be a permanent divorce. So maybe Rebbe Eliezer only said it's good where the person that is mutter forever. But over here, he's making even the person is mutter only for a day. Maybe you could even do this. And I can ask the same question according to the Rabbanan. He never, according to Rabbanan, in allowing certain people not to be divorced, he never really completed a divorce at all. But over here, he completed the divorce for the day. Once it's complete, now listen, this is a very funny Gemara, the way Tosfos understands it, okay? Because what was the Gemara asking originally? The Gemara was asking originally, tomorrow you will be my wife. Today you won't be my wife, right? So could that divorce come back and flip back into effect? Spring back into effect. That was the question. The marriage would now spring back into effect when the divorce was over. All of a sudden, the Gemara changes its mind. and presents the alternative as being Kivan de Pascha, Pascha. Once you divorced, you're divorced. And therefore, you would have to remarry if you want to be remarried. Whoa, wait a minute. You said before that the possibility would be that over here, having once divorced totally, the marriage can now spring back into effect. Tosfos says the strangest thing. Tosfos says that even though that's not what we were leading up to, because we were starting to lead up to the question about whether it could spring back. Listen to that. I mean, this is really very surprising. The Gemara, says Tosfos, the Gemara is spontaneous. When you're listening into a Gemara, you are listening to people thinking. You're not listening to a written book. And so what happened over here is that we started to present the alternative, and then we said, Kivan de Pascha, and then the thinking Gemara says, oh, actually, you know, I mean, Kivan de Pascha would be Pascha. I don't know, what was I thinking, you know? So that's how Tosfos understands the Gemara. It's true, but then we realize, as we're talking, that, nah, that couldn't be. So it's literally in mid-conversation that we have changed directions. Isn't that wild? Unbelievable. Anyway, so then he realized that would be the only alternative, given the Pascha Pascha. And after thinking it out, when Rava asked the question, he realized that, yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. Bein l'Rav Eliezer, bein l'Rabbanan. For sure, kivan de Pascha, Pascha. I mean, once, look, the get is a get, and you want to reconstitute a Kedushin. The Kedushin was removed, so how can it spring back into effect? You're going to have to actually create that Kedushin. Okay, gentlemen, this was a very difficult daf in the sense of it stretches your mind in all of these different directions. And I mean, it's just amazing the amount of material and possibilities and implications and weighing things and reasonability versus logical necessity. And the question of, look at the elements. We don't even know whether the machlokas is in a chutz situation or an almanat situation. We're not even 100% sure whether the almanat situation is almanat that there's no marriage or almanat that there's no relationship. We're not even certain that Rabbi Eliezer had actually derived this from a din in Kahuna, or whether Rabbi Eliezer had derived it from the din of Yatzav Ha'isa. We don't even know if Yatzav Ha'isa might be extended to a further hekesh of meaning kod me havaya rishona, kod me havaya shnia. We don't even know whether the nature of kritut is current kritut, and it's talking about two different issues, how it is that a get has to be total and how it is that there can't be strings attached, which is a different issue in terms of an almanat. And then we need to be talking about, well, what do we really mean when we're talking about goreim or masne? Or, I mean, are we really talking about the differences between Isurei Kahuna? There's a subtle arguments back and forth. I must say, it's a challenging daf. And the fact that Tosfos brings up this, your feeling that you're really in the thick of things. This is, and I think you've noticed that Gittin gets more and more like this as you get into deeper and deeper into the Masechet. You know, you first can handle this particular idea, then everything starts coming together at once. And when they say you're in the thick of things, I mean, you're in the thicket of things, not just in the thick of things. So it's really a very, very excitingly constructed Masechet. Just hold on tight and enjoy the ride, especially when we have our very own Capitan with his sturdy hand on the rudder. We're bound to get where we need to go. And I say, storms be damned, skipper. Straight ahead, full speed ahead. See you all, Bezrat Hashem. May we be Zeicha to Besura Steves. And remember, the Haftorah was the Marsayech Umachrivayech Mimech Yetzeyu. Anybody who wants to leave, wants to go to Chutz Lartz, decides that Israel is not liberal enough. So long, gentlemen. That was what the Haftorah promised us. Thank you. All right, then. I look forward, Bezrat Hashem, to old Mr. Bornstein's best bracha, if the good Lord spares us. You never know. Tomorrow may be even better. Go through it, everybody. That's Lacharabba. Thank you for being there.